The Villain Will Show is back, episode number 4, and the Niners and the Lions are still alive, which has set up the first ever Villain Will Bowl, which I guess this is the inaugural because the Lions never make the playoffs. Although, did you know the last Lions playoff road win was against the San Francisco 49ers in 1957? Fun fact.
Wow. I don't know if we can buck that trend.
That's, I'm telling you.
It's in the cards.
I'm telling you, man. Hey, it's funny how history repeats itself like that. But yes, we're going to have the Phil and Will Bowl all about that.
Maybe we're good luck. We start the Phil and Will Show, and this is only the fourth episode of this podcast, this series, and our teams are playing in the NFC title game. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
It's pretty impressive. Do you think that they'll play to a tie and that they'll just move them both on into the Super Bowl so that we can have like a fun thing to talk about for the next 2 weeks?
I would prefer that. I mean, I don't really want the Chiefs or the Ravens to win. Like, I don't like the Chiefs. Don't like Mahomes. But I feel like the Niners, we have a better chance of beating them than we do if the Ravens win. So I don't know, but I think we also beat the Ravens. I don't like
Here's Mahomes. The deal.
It's tough, man. It's really tough.
Here's my thinking on this whole entire situation. The Chiefs are my nightmare right now making the Super Bowl. So I am a Lamar Jackson fan going into this weekend, and here's why. If the Chiefs play the Lions in the Super Bowl, the entire storyline heading into the Super Bowl, it's going to be a little bit about the Lions and their first Super Bowl ever. It's going to be a lot about Taylor Swift dating Travis Kelce and how great that was for the NFL. We're going to get a lot of Swiftie coverage. And in the only 2 week period that I'm going to care about the Super Bowl in my entire existence, because it'll be the first one the Lions ever make, I don't need to hear about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. The second scenario with the Chiefs making the Super Bowl is they play the 49ers. And the last time the Chiefs played the 49ers in the Super Bowl, guess what? 3 weeks later, the entire world shut down because of COVID-19. And I feel like that's going to be a massive storyline going into the Super Bowl for sure. I think they're going to be talking about it a lot.
Really?
In the build up. Oh yeah, absolutely. Because they're going to be talking about how like, the game before that, it was like the last normal sporting event we got for a very long time. So I don't want the Chiefs to make it. I don't care what Taylor Swift does. I like Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is fine. I think the people who hate on Taylor Swift for this whole situation are kind of missing the point. Taylor Swift isn't the one who is saying, "Hey, NFL, put me on screen 9,000 times." But
also, man, they're like, five NFL's cutaways
crazy with this, but the NFL is overbearing with
it. I don't know if it's that overbearing. I think they're like quick cutaways in like a 3-hour broadcast. It's like, who cares?
Oh my God. So here's Lexa Power though, Will. So Lexa Power, wow. I didn't know that my Survivor podcasters did football too. Did you guys know I work on the NFL on Fox podcast? If you guys send in questions for Dave, I'll make sure we get them on the show. And then
wow.
I know. So we got to send in questions for Dave. And then she said, "I can't tolerate football stuff when I'm not at work. My Pats are out of it. So football is just work for me right now, but I'm wishing you guys luck with this pod." Well, thank you, Lexa. And maybe we will send our questions and maybe we can get it.
We're official. Sure that's not Alexa.
It is a Lexa. It is one a of Lexa. A few Lexas. Yes, it's Lexa.
Okay, but it's not Alexa who okay.
Good yeah, time. But maybe we can officially get this called the Phil and Will Bowl so that we can really explode nationally here.
Yeah, can we have the NFL rename the NFC Championship? Would that be good?
I mean, only when the Lions play the 49ers. We're not asking for too much.
Right, anymore. No, just for this week, yeah.
But you don't agree with me? You think I'm being a baby with both of those takes or no?
I don't really care about coverage of 2 weeks. Like, yeah, I'll listen to podcasts. Predictions, especially if the Niners are in it, I'm gonna, you know, get really hyped up. But the things I will listen to and the content I will consume will be more like, you know, matchup stuff on the field, and like probably they'll be from like Niners experts, and it will be all biased, and I'll get really excited. Mm-hmm. Like, this is why we can beat the Chiefs. We can exploit this in their secondary. You know, they have the 12th highest. They give up the 12th most yards to tight ends and crossing route, random stuff that will just make the Niners look really good. And I'll get super excited. I won't be going on like national, you know, I'm not going to be watching like ESPN or First Take every morning and like listening to Taylor.
Does anybody do that? I don't think so.
I mean, I will on the occasion, especially if your team like wins a championship. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, Phil. But I guess
I'm a Yankees fan, dude. So I experienced it a lot okay. when I was a child.
No, it's just fun. Or even a, not even a championship, like a big win. Like when the Niners end the Cowboys season, the past two football seasons, it is fun to check out what Stephen A has to say. And just, he just eviscerates the Cowboys. And it is absolutely entertaining. Now, I wouldn't be doing that for like 2 weeks. But I don't really care about the storylines and the Taylor Swift or the COVID of it all. I just, man, I don't really want to play the Ravens, not as good of a matchup for us. And the Chiefs, I mean, Mahomes is scary, man. Mahomes is a scary guy. Like, I don't want to play him either. Like, I really wish, and no offense to the Lions, I wish there was like a Lions option in the AFC, you know, like if the Texans had managed to win.
Yeah.
Somehow. And you
well, it's kind of like that year we got the Bengals versus the Rams. That was who both like everybody like who I forget who did the Rams beat in the
Rams beat the Niners.
And, oh yeah, I forgot about that. That's
and the Bengals beat the Chiefs. The Bengals
and it's
beat
funny the because the Arrowhead. Chiefs wanted the Chiefs probably wanted the Rams and the Niners probably wanted the Bengals, and then both those teams won to get there. That's right. That was the year where you guys beat the Rams twice in the regular season. You were super confident going to that game. It was like a bye week, you kept calling it, and then the Niners lost.
No, I mean, we barely beat the Rams. That was the last game of the regular season, and we were full of injuries, and I think Bosa might have been out that entire season, if that's the correct one, or we missed the playoffs.
When it was anyway. When you got the six seed. You were the six seed.
Oh, yeah. We were not favored to win. This is the year we beat Green Bay 13-7 or 13-10 in the snow with the punt that we talked about last week. We weren't at all favored, but we couldn't make it happen. Thanks for reminding me that and bringing that up.
That's what I was doing. I was doing it on purpose. Yeah, this is an interesting Final Four because you have three of like the Ravens haven't been there a lot, but it seems like every time the Ravens get close, they always win. You know, like we've seen two Ravens Super Bowl wins since 2000, and they don't stand out as one of those like perennial powerhouse teams the way that the Chiefs, the Niners, the Patriots, the Colts used to when Peyton Manning was there. Like they're not that, but they when they get there, they're scary. The Niners and the Chiefs have been, I mean, what is it, 4 out of 5 years for the Niners in the NFC Championship game? The Chiefs have been to the AFC Championship six straight every year with Mahomes as a starter. And then here's the Lions for the first time since 1991 making it to the NFC Championship game. It is kind of fun. And like the Lions are America's team right now. It's funny to watch the NFC North fans really fall apart right now, especially the Vikings fans, because they're such a pathetic franchise too, like the Lions, where they can't win a Super Bowl. And their fans, I was reading one thread today where somebody kept calling Lions their little brother. And I was like, as a Vikings fan, you can't call anybody little brother. Like it's just, you've never won a Super Bowl. So nobody's little brother. Like if you're the Bears or the Packers and you say that makes sense, but they're, and like watching the Rams fans fall apart is always a good time, but everybody else is loving the Lions. And that's, it's weird to be in that situation. I think the Lions are going to get smoked this weekend. I'm a very realist. I'm a big time realist when it comes to my favorite teams. I predicted the Miami Hurricanes Final Four run last year. I also predicted them getting knocked out by Loyola Chicago in the first round the year Loyola Chicago went to the Final Four. And right now, I've been pretty spot on with the Lions. I did think that they were going to beat the Bucks a little bit worse than they did. However, the Lions played a terrible first half of football and still were up by 2 touchdowns late in the fourth quarter of that game. This week, we're super outmatched pretty much across the board. If Deebo Samuel doesn't play, I think the Lions have a little bit of a chance. But ultimately, our secondary just I don't think is good enough to play with the 49ers.
Yeah, for me, as long as it's not raining, that seems to be...
Brock Purdy stunk last week.
Yeah, and I get it. People want to hate on Brock Purdy. I get it because they people want to because it's like he can't be this good. He was the last pick. And like all these NFL analysts, like during the offseason, all they do is draft coverage. And like clearly no one took him seriously. So now that he's proving everyone wrong, these people are like, wait, this can't be right. This guy can't be this good. He can't be the starting quarterback for a Super Bowl contending team. Guess what? He has been now 2 seasons in a row. Mm-hmm. And I do like how he has one bad game. Okay, I guess the Ravens game too, but we talked to mention that. A lot of those passes were tipped. And that's a really good defense. But it's like, okay, 2 games out of a 17-game season and now a playoff game.
He's so
18 games, 2 of them are bad. So now I'm correct in that he's not a good quarterback and he sucks. Whereas like the 16 other games that you've seen from him, you're just ignoring that completely. Like you're ignoring the entire regular season if you're just putting all that weight onto one game in the rain against the Packers team that I think at this point we just have to say the Packers are a pretty damn good football team and that we don't look at their record. They blew out Dallas. They stopped Dallas's offense. I mean, Dallas's offense had like the most points scored. They scored more points in the Niners per game. And they didn't really, I know that what they ended up with like 38 at the end or 36.
48, 32 was the final.
32, but like that's not a real 32 points. That was, you know, they were not even in that game. It was 27-0 at one point. Okay. So, I mean, look, we can look at what the Packers did to the Lions on Thanksgiving Day. I mean, wasn't that like a quick 28-0 or 21-0? Something absolutely absurd.
They jumped out to a 14-0 lead and then the Lions kind of claw. It was always like a two-score game. The Lions actually had the ball
like it,
with
I feel like it got to it. Oh, really? I feel like they put a stomping on the Lions.
But, it looked a lot worse than the final score. The final score was not indicative of how bad
I
of a game
focused
Lions
on played. On cooking the turkey and the potatoes. I took my focus away from football. It was that bad of a game.
It was 23-6 at halftime, and then the Lions actually had the ball 29-20. Oh no, they scored 29-22 and then didn't get the onside kick. So yeah.
Okay. So then it was 29-15.
29-14.
29-14.
In the third quarter, though, and that last touchdown was scored because Dan Campbell went for it on like 4th and 6 from his own 25 in the third quarter, which you got to live and die with Dan Campbell. As one with the stone says here, Dan Campbell's balls is the X factor, not R. It's right. His ball is one thing. But
it's one set of balls.
Yeah, so Green Bay is a good. And I just want to say this for all those pundits out there. And look, they get the clicks, right? I always tell people, don't interact with the people who are trolling because that's what they want. If you retweet it, if you comment on it, any of that stuff, that helps them get higher up in the algorithm. Instead of doing that, comment on the people that you agree with more because then you'll see them more and then that'll get them up into the upper echelon. So like follow Phil and Will, follow the specialists and all that fun stuff on social media. Here's the bad game for Brock Purdy against the Packers. 23 of 39 for 252 yards and a touchdown. What a piece of shit. Like, what a bad player. Now, I understand the Ravens game. Yeah, he was 18 of 32, 255, no touchdowns, 4 picks. I mean, that's an atrocious game.
But he looked worse against the Packers than he did against the Ravens, honestly.
Yes.
If you're taking each of those picks.
Like, let me end this real quick. 31 touchdowns, 11 picks, threw for 4,280 yards this year. I don't care who his weapons are. Like, there's a lot of really, really good wide receivers in the NFL whose quarterbacks can't get them the ball. Look at DJ Moore. Okay, he can't get the ball because Justin Fields stinks. That happens all the time. So the fact that, okay, he's a system quarterback. Good for him. He's he's the last pick in the NFL draft. He should be a system quarterback. If he's not a system quarterback, then every other team is a bunch of idiots. So I don't know. I think it's just nonsense and it's just click, click, click. That's all the pundits want. And here I am defending your quarterback leading into the NFC Championship game when the Kings of the North is what I want. But I just, it's
is that
just
a
so
t-shirt
stupid.
From, you already got a t-shirt from this season?
Yeah,
NFC North champions.
Yeah.
I remember doing that when your team makes the playoffs or like wins the division for the first time in a while, you're like, I got to get the t-shirt for the division.
I got and the Canes final four too.
After a while, you don't need the t-shirts. Like I remember for the Giants, San Francisco Giants, it's like 2010. We won the division for the first time since like 2003. And that was in 2010. I guess that wasn't that long, but when you're a kid, it feels like it's a lot longer. Like, we haven't been in the playoffs in 7 years. And we finally won the NL West as like t-shirt. And then it's like, oh, we won in 2012 or we got to, you know, we did our World Series stuff in 2012 and 2014. I forget which one was the wild card. I think in 2014 was definitely a wild card year. Anyway, you buy fewer t-shirts, the more championships you win. So
I have all the Yankees
sitting here with the
from
fresh
the 90s.
Cheese.
Yeah, I have all the Yankee stuff from the 90s, but the only reason that anybody bought anything in 2000 was because it was the Subway Series. But by that point...
In 2009, you probably don't have anything.
I don't have anything. And I also couldn't tell you anything about the 99 series because like 98 was the team that was great. 96, obviously, was their first World Series since the 70s. And then 98 was the unbelievable team that had set the record for most wins in the season. And that was like Jeter was really at his high point. And the next year, like, nobody gave a shit that they beat the Braves. It was just like, yeah, okay, cool. They beat the Braves again. Like, woohoo, whoop-de-doo. I'm pumped, man. I mean, the Lions, I'm excited. And I think that, you know, my biggest takeaway from this is when you are down for as long as we were, it feels so good to be up because it, I mean, I've never seen a good Lions season. I've wasted my time every time I watch a Lions football game my entire life until this year. And it feels, it just feels amazing for this to be happening. And for all like the sourpuss fans out there, it's like, I do love how sports fans like argue with each other as like your fan base stinks. Well, your team's a bunch of losers. Your team's a bunch of losers. It's like the Lions are playing in this game this week. If you're a Lions fan and you're dwelling on that kind of stuff, you've missed the point of it's been 32 years, 33 years since you've even made it this far. Just enjoy the ride and let the bitter babies be bitter babies. Like you have to do that. But sports fans are just a funny, interesting thing. Jake T says, here's five because you guys deserve it, but you guys going to watch the Royal Rumble on Saturday. I'm going to be the biggest Ravens fans on Sunday only. Not going to watch the Royal Rumble, but if you live in the Tampa area, go to Johnny Fairplay's event. I know there's going to be a whole bunch of Survivor people there. There's going to be wrestlers there. There's going to be other reality TV people there. He's doing that in Tampa or Clearwater, which is pretty much the same thing this upcoming, I think it's Saturday night. But yeah, anyway, that's all beside the point there. But thank you, Jake. Appreciate the super like there.
Big thanks.
Yeah, that's good. Will, did I miss anything else on that? Was there anything else you wanted to say?
I have a question for you. Yeah, it's like, You're going into this game, and it seems like you're pretty level-headed with, like, look, Purdy had a bad game against the Packers, and it was in the weather against a pretty hot team. It doesn't seem like you're coming in expecting to, like, win this game. How disappointed will you be if the Niners beat you? Like, how bad would this be of a loss?
It really isn't. Because here's the thing. The Lions have exercised nothing but demons this year. Okay, they've exercised all of them. First NFC, first division title since 1993. First playoff win since 1991. First NFC championship game since 1991. That is huge. Like, that is massive. We've gotten rid of that. Now, we've never made a Super Bowl. So if we make a Super Bowl, we get to take our name off that list too. That's amazing. If we win a Super Bowl, we get to take our name off that list too. That's amazing. But just knowing that I could live for another 30 years, 30 more years without the Lions making an NFC championship game or without winning a playoff game, and it still wouldn't be as long as the last streak just was. It's just nice to get that out of your system because now you go into next year and it's not, well, they had a great year, but they ultimately fell apart at the end and the Packers stole the division from them and then they lost their first playoff game. Like, Dolphins fans right now are in a world of hurt. Me as a Lions fan, I'm just happy we're here. I will say, I've been the biggest supporter of Jared Goff since we traded for him. I always said we could not win a Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford, and Matthew Stafford did go on to win a Super Bowl with the Rams, but that was because the team around him was built already. With how much money Matthew Stafford was getting,
system QB.
You were always going to get him. You were always going to get one weapon for him or something like that, but there wasn't enough salary cap to build around him. So you go, you get Jared Goff, you get all these picks, everything happens. And Jared Goff's been amazing. I don't care what anybody says. Everybody can rip him to shreds. And what I love about the Lions and Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell is that they are ignoring what everybody, what all the public and stuff are saying. Some coaches don't do that. Some GMs don't do that. They are ignoring everything and they're just trusting their guys. And Jared Goff this year finishes second in the league in passing yards, played really good in the second half against the Bucs. Like, he's another one, 30 touchdowns, 12 picks, but everybody's going to focus on the one or two really bad games he had this year. Every quarterback has one or two really bad games. We just don't talk about Patrick Mahomes because Patrick Mahomes has just been like elevated to this God tier where we're not allowed to insult him. I love Jared Goff. I think the future is super bright in Detroit, although that division might be the best one in football next year, which is why I was more concerned about the Rams game and getting that win, because I do think next year with the Packers, with the Vikings getting Kirk Cousins back and healthy, and with the Bears, whatever they do with their quarterback situation, their defense is very good and they played really good down the stretch. I'm worried for the Lions next year, but I'm happy we got all this out of our system now. If we beat you guys, this is the magic run. That's really all there is to it. Obviously I'm going to be rooting like crazy in that Super Bowl, but it's like, if we beat you guys, it's already the most successful season in Lions franchise history. So, like, what more can I really forget? And Corksall says, have people forgotten Jared Goff played in the Super Bowl? People just, it's narrative, 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 man. If you listen in the echo chamber, you just get the same nonsense all the time. Jared Goff's been a solid quarterback except for, like, 1 year. And people tried to run him out of the league the same way people are still trying to run, like, almost trying to run Purdy out of the league all of a sudden. He's not good enough. It's so ridiculous. It's so nonsensical.
Yeah, I think you have the right mindset for this. Just because I think playoff losses are not created equal. And if the Lions lose, you can say this wasn't, you know, a disappointing season, or that we, you know, were failures, or what a waste. We didn't win a Super Bowl. You can't win a Super Bowl every season. And I think there's different levels to it. So it's like, if you're the Bills and you lost again to KC and Mahomes and you like cannot get past them every year, that is going to be brutal. That is going to be devastating, because you know you're one of the top teams in the league. You have one of the best quarterbacks in Josh Allen. You just can't get over that hump. And so that's bad. That's painful. Yeah. But like the Texans losing to the Ravens, they're not like, wow.
Like they're not. Yeah, I mean, the Texans won a playoff game this year. What more could you really have asked for?
Right. Like, that's insane that they even won a playoff game. And I think you have the right approach, that your psyche won't be destroyed if you're, you know, obviously you're rooting for them to win. You'll be disappointed. But on the other side of things, and this is honestly a little bit scary, it's like the Niners have all the pressure in the world, because, I mean, you keep hearing the stat for NFC championships in 5 years. How many Super Bowl appearances? One Super Bowl appearance. And did we win? No, we didn't. To be more condescending towards that. I can be, but there's no need
in this situation. I've already rolled over.
It's scary that you're the one being like, yeah, if we lose, it's fine. I'm the one like, oh man, we like have to win this. And then, so that's,
Lions
that's
have the, no pressure.
That's the week. Past 5 years, right? That's the past 5 years. And then if we go back to the Harbaugh era, okay, we made three straight Harbaugh national championship, college coach. He's in the NFL now. He's with the Chargers.
He just got signed by the Chargers. That's crazy.
We made three straight NFC championship games with Harbaugh. How many Super Bowl appearances?
One.
Did we win?
No, there was a blackout. No. Yeah.
So for me, this is as a Niners fan who has a conscious brain, and you know, I think 95 was our last Super Bowl, and I was, you know, I was a wee one there. Mm-hmm. Don't remember that. This is the 7th NFC championship game, and yet still no Super Bowls to show for it. Mm-hmm. And only 2 Super Bowl appearances. So for me, and for a lot of Niner fans, anyone who's under the age of 30, I mean, you've never seen, you weren't even alive. So mm-hmm. There is so much pressure on the Niners here, and especially, you know, they look so bad last week that it is a little scary. You have this hot Detroit team who feels like the team of destiny. They've got the whole country on their side. Everyone's rooting for them. So this is a scary game, man. And all I can say is I hope it doesn't rain, and I hope Brock Purdy struggles, that we can kind of chalk that up to, hey, it's raining, his hands are really small, he plays like shit in the rain. We saw it in Cleveland. Even though in Cleveland no one talks about it, he did his final drive similar to what he did against the Packers, and he had us at for a 43-yard field goal to win the game.
Yeah, you can't help that your kicker stunk. And I was in Tampa Bay for the Lions-Tampa game that day.
And then the whole
story
after was how much Purdy sucked. It's like, guys, he had a game-winning drive, and Moody just missed the chip shot for the kick. 43-yarder in the NFL? I mean, come on. So
that's what happened in the Bills game this week. And he misses that 40-something yarder. I know the wind was crazy and stuff, but I do want to say with the Niners.
But see, no one's putting that on Allen. Everyone's putting in on
of course,
back.
Yeah, of course, because
everyone put it on Purdy and not our kicker.
Again, what is it, man? Ultimately, with ESPN, with these pundits, and I have no problem saying this,
but it wasn't just ESPN.
Brock Purdy's
not as exciting
for them.
It was a lot of other people that I trust and podcasts that I listen to that were like, yeah, I mean, Purdy really couldn't handle the Browns and that defense, and like no one even brought up how grave a final drive that was, and that he even got them into a position to win the game with a field goal. So, mm-hmm. Look, if it's not raining and it's perfectly clear and Purdy is throwing balls at people's feet over and over again,
yeah, that's a problem.
Then something's wrong. And maybe the stage is too big, but I've seen him in moments throughout the season and last season. Like, remember, this is his second NFC championship start. Technically, I think he threw it was his first pass attempt in which he got hurt. So maybe we just don't have all the evidence. Maybe he would have been throwing balls into the ground against the Eagles last year, but I highly doubt that. I highly think if we have a clear day, and that is an issue as a quarterback, you should be able to play in the rain. So they got to figure that out. Yeah, I know he had a glove going.
He's not
you know?
A dome team. Yeah.
He's taking the glove on and off. So I got to figure that out. But I think, hey, we can win this game at home. It's clear. And then the Super Bowl is in Vegas, which is a dome. So mm-hmm. don't have to worry about it for now.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts.
One thing I will say with the Bills and with the 49ers, especially with the Bills more so than the Niners, but your window, people have been talking about a lot this week, is the championship window. The window gets smaller and smaller each year because the Niners have so many stud players at so many positions that eventually you're going to run out of cap space with that. Not right now. They've done a very good job. I mean, John Lynch has been masterful with this, but it's good. You're going to run out.
It helps having Purdy as the last pick of the draft. I mean, he's getting
Jared Goff,
nothing.
Super cheap for the Lions. And that's why the Lions team is the best team they've ever had in franchise history, because their quarterback is not getting paid a ridiculous amount like these other teams. And that's why the championship window stays open longer. The Lions championship window ain't closing anytime soon. Yeah, they're going to lose Ben Johnson after this year, but so what? Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam Laporta, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Aiden Hutchinson, Brian Branch. These are all players that are absolutely coming back. You're not losing these guys. So I love this. Ryan says the window is when the QB is on a rookie deal or when the QB is thrown out in the trash for no reason. And that's what happened with Jared Goff. And the Lions now have a very good quarterback who could end up winning. If Jared Goff wins a Super Bowl this year, which I don't think is going to happen, but if he were to win the Super Bowl this year, that is the greatest trade in sports history. The Matthew Stafford for Jared Goff. That trade and all the other things that went with it.
For both teams.
That's what I'm saying. It's the greatest trade in sports history.
Because
you had two teams win a Super Bowl within 4 years of that happening. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I will say for windows too, it's like if you're really an elite QB and you are getting paid, like the Chiefs Super Bowl window, as long as Patrick Mahomes is on the team.
Yeah.
So there, it goes both ways. So I think you need either the tip top of the tier QB, or you need a QB that's pretty cheap. I think it's when you get into those like middling QBs, like your Kirk Cousins, your Daniel Jones, your, you know, Baker Mayfields. We'll see how other quarterbacks turn out. But I think if you have Burrow, we saw him get very close. I think Allen, you can't really put this all on him. There are QBs that it's like you need that top tier or you need to go like way, way cheap and lower.
All right. So let's quickly and then we'll jump over to the other game and then we'll talk about this Baseball Hall of Fame stuff that we wanted to talk about here. But what are you taking in this game right now? San Fran is favored by 7. And in terms of the total,
So does ESPN Bet have it at -6?
I know, right? I should be looking at ESPN Bet. Right now, ESPN Bet has it at -1.5. No, they have it at -7 as well. And the total at 50.5, which is what everybody else pretty much has. 50.5, 51, something like that. Where do you feel on any of this?
Oh, man. This is tough because I haven't really been paying attention to that side of things, the betting and the gambling. I'm sure I'll hop in on a bunch of props before the game and lose a bunch of money like I seem to do every single weekend.
Hey, you had Jahmyr Gibbs over on receiving yards. Too bad you lost your other 9 bets, right?
I hit that one. Yeah, I had Lions over 1.5 field goals. I lost that. I had Niners team total over, lost that one. I had Christian McCaffrey longest reception over 14.5 yards, lost that one. I think I once, Josh Reynolds, I had over 2.5 receptions, and he got hurt once he had 2 receptions. So that was no good. I think I had a couple other winners sprinkled throughout the weekend, but it wasn't too friendly over here. So, I mean, that has not been my focus. I'm just more excited to watch the football game. I just want the Niners to win. I don't need them to win by 7. I don't need them to win by, 14. You know, if I take it alt line or something, I have this hunch that we're just going to blow them out because you guys have like the worst pass defense and we have all these stud receivers and we're playing at home and it looks like a clear day. I could go that route, but honestly, I just hope the Niners get the W. Like, we just got to win by at least 1 point. And if that's in overtime, that's fine. If that's in, we blow them out in the first quarter, that's great too.
Will's
but
so much gotta, more desperate than me right
we,
now. I love
we are.
It.
You can see, you can feel it. You understand the spot of these two teams and their fan bases, where one is going to be like, "Wow, what a run! Can't believe we got here, made it this far. What a season! Broke the curse. Blah blah blah." And one's fan base is like, "Holy crap! Our social media has been posting Quest for 6 since 2010, 2011, and we have not. We're still at 5. We have not gotten the 6th." Lombardi Trophy yet. So I just need the win, man.
I would take the over in this game. In terms of the spread, I really don't know. The Lions could keep this close. The Lions could win this game. Like, this is a game 10% of the time. You play 100 times, the Lions probably win 10 to 15 times. It's going to depend on how Brock Purdy does play. If Brock Purdy can't take advantage of the secondary, the Lions will win. The Lions, to me, feel like they're still a year or two away from actually like winning, but this is a really weak year across the NFL. I would just take the over. The Niners have the opportunity here to put up 40 on the Lions, but the Lions also have the ability to put up 30 in this game, depending on
40
or 40.
Honestly, the Niners defense over the past few weeks of the season, I know they have a great roster defensively, but they have not looked all that sharp. And in that game against the Packers, it was a lot of bend, don't break. You know, the Packers moved the ball pretty easily on the Niners, especially in the first half. And it was just holding the Packers to field goals. And then there was that missed field goal. I mean, there's a lot of points left on the board by the Packers. And sure, you can credit that to, you know, 49ers defense, you know, playing great in the red zone and buckling down. But you give the Lions a chance. I know the Lions also aren't great in the red zone, but you give the Lions those chances, they will score points. They will put points up on the board. So, seven's high. I think it's about right. But absolutely, I'm not sitting here saying, Phil, you got no chance. You're scrub team. This is as far as they've gone. And I want to be condescending. I want to be mean. But as you know, as bad as we looked last week, and as good as you know this Lions team can be, I can't sit here all that confidently and tell you you got no shot. As much as I want to.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say about this game, nobody ever talks about lines, right? Offensive, defensive lines. It's like what nobody discusses. The Lions have one of the best offensive lines in football. Mm-hmm. The Niners have one of the best defensive lines in football. But the Niners' defensive line is what makes their defense click. If their defensive line doesn't take advantage of the matchup, that's when the secondary struggles. If the Lions can keep Jared Goff's pocket clean, the Lions can win this game. That is
absolutely what the Niners D line. It's like they got the big names. You know, they've got Bosa, they got Chase Young, they got Hargrave, they got Armstead. They didn't do anything against the Packers. They didn't sack Jordan Love once. And I know Jordan Love is way more athletic and scrambly than Jared Goff. Like Jordan Love, man, he is shifty. Like he really avoids pressure super well, especially for a rookie or a quasi rookie first year starting, whatever you want to call it. Jared Goff doesn't have that ability. So at least the Niners have that going for them. But like you said, the Niners or the Lions have a much better O-line. So that is a matchup to watch for. The Niners O-line needs to, or defensive line needs to step up big time. And then also our O-line. Yeah, we got Trent Williams, but who else? I think all Niners fans heading into this draft, we actually have a first round draft pick this season. First time in a long time. It's pretty much, hey, get the best O-lineman available. Like it could be a tackle, it could be a guard, whatever. Just get someone, because right now our O-line is not that good. So the Lions, I know they can put pressure too with, you know, Aiden Hutchinson and everybody on that side of the ball. So I'm scared, man. I'm scared. We're desperate. We need this. I don't feel super confident. I'm just excited to watch. I did consider going, but the Lions fans, they haven't been to a playoff game in so long. They priced you. I mean, and that worries me too, that it's going to be way more Lions fans than you think. Michigan, you know, we know Midwest teams travel really well. Michigan teams travel really well. So, as do the Niners fans, not saying that we don't, but a team that has been to the playoffs this many times. And as I just said, seven NFC championships. And I think how many of those, probably three or four of them, I want to say, have been at home, maybe even five, like a good amount of them have been at home. This isn't some rare once in a lifetime opportunity for Niners fans. And so you see these ticket prices going up and up and up and up because the Lions fans, man, they've been saving up their entire lives for a moment like this.
Yeah. All right, let's jump over to the other game that we'll talk about for approximately 5 seconds since we talked about this one for 35. We got the Chiefs going to the Ravens. The Chiefs are 3.5-point underdogs. The total's at 44.5. The total had opened at 46.5, dropped 2 points. And it had opened, the spread had opened at 3, and now it's 3.5. Do you have anything in you that will allow you to take the Ravens when Patrick Mahomes is getting a field goal plus the extra half point? Like, I can't bring myself to do it. I have to take
Last week, I said the same thing. Oh, did we review our picks from last week? I don't think we did.
Very quickly, here's what you had. You had the over in the Ravens game, which was at 44. The game ended with 44 points. I had the Ravens minus 7.5. Hit that. San Fran, minus 8.5. We both had. They played like shit. We know that. San Fran over 30.5. We both missed that. And then you had the Detroit, Tampa Bay over 48.5 that hit. I had Detroit -6.5 that hit. You had Kansas City +3. So that hit. And I had under 45.5, which didn't hit because that turned into like a scoring bonanza in the second half. But we did pretty good. I mean, we did okay last week. That's we did much better in the wild card weekend. 50. But yeah, yeah, 3.5 points. How do you not take Mahomes here?
It's the same reason why I was on the Chiefs last week. And I wanted the Bills to win.
Jordan Alford. I actually think the Lions will win this week. I just had to throw that one last in there just so that
you can start. Of course, that's fine. There's a chance, man. There's a chance. I'm not sitting here being a cocky 49er fan as much as I want to be. No, the Chiefs, I mean, if it was 3 or 2, maybe you'll question it. I think 3.5, but aren't we getting tricked here? We always talk about this. Like, what is Vegas?
But it's opened at 3, and then so many people bet on the Ravens that it actually moved so that you're now getting the Chiefs because people are taking the favorites. Because look, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens looked really good in the second half of that game. The defense didn't give up a touchdown because the touchdown was on a punt return. But are the Ravens as good as what they did to the Texans, or is that just they played the Texans?
The Ravens, I think, are the best, most complete overall team in the NFL. But, I mean, you got Mahomes on the other side. And I don't really love Mahomes that much, but, man, he's scary. And their defense is really good. Like, their defense is no joke. And I think that's why Mahomes is that's why he's been to 6 straight AFC title games. Like, every year he started, we keep hearing that. Obviously, part of that is because of him, but their offense has not looked good all season. They don't have Tyreek Hill anymore. They have this like mismatch of receivers that we don't know. Every week it's someone different. Kelce did step it up a little bit. I think I called that. I was like, yeah, I think the Chiefs are going to turn it up now that now that they're in the playoffs. And it looks like they are clicking. The Chiefs just played Buffalo at Buffalo. They're not going to be scared to go on the road to Baltimore. And we had heard the thing about the road playoff wins for Mahomes and that he always gets these games. He's had the easiest kind of path to the playoffs with the one seeds and games at Arrowhead. He just went in Buffalo, one of the hardest places to play in a windy game full of weather against Josh Allen, a great QB, maybe the second QB, best QB in the league, and they won. So you think they're going to be scared to go to Baltimore? I don't think so. So I'm taking the Chiefs again, man. I'm taking the Chiefs +3.5 because as good as the Ravens have been, I need to see it from Lamar. They've got a lot of young players on this team. I need to see it from their defense. To me, it feels like the Chiefs, like what's not working with the Chiefs right now, especially too, the Ravens, they played the Texans and the Texans who they play, the Browns with Joe Flacco and all those injuries and no Nick Chubb. And, they just fired 3 of their coaches or whatever. The Browns were kind of a mess of a franchise as it is. I don't think we can sit there and say the Texans were this like great team. And obviously their offense was good, but man, you look, the Ravens just played the Texans. The Chiefs just went on the road and beat the Bills. So I'm taking that momentum into this game and I'm taking the Chiefs.
Yeah. Alford says here too, blitzing Mahomes is a death sentence and the Ravens love to blitz. I think for my sanity, I will take the Chiefs spread and the Ravens money line. You know, like that's like, I'm not actually going to bet that, but I'm saying if you ask me who's going to win the game, I would say the Ravens are going to win. But if I was picking against the spread, I'd say this is going to be a field goal game. So I'll take the Chiefs with the extra half point. But I need the Ravens to win this game for my sanity. I'm not a Mahomes hater, but I am tired of like the shenanigans with the Chiefs. The Chiefs are getting pushed down our throats so hard, and they have been for years now because they're so good. And that's fine. I'm like the person who always said, I love Tom Brady. I was not a Patriots fan. Yeah. Did I get annoyed with the Patriots being good all the time? Sure. But why hate greatness? Like there's no reason to hate greatness. So I like the Chiefs. I like Patrick Mahomes. I like Travis Kelce. I like Andy Reid. I'm over the storyline shit with them though. And I'd rather see the Ravens and Lamar Jackson actually get it done. Look, I root for Lamar Jackson because I do think with, a lot of what goes on with Lamar Jackson, he won that one MVP and then he was terrible in the playoffs. And we've seen Lamar struggle in the playoffs. He bet on himself last year, kind of won that bet. I mean, it worked out for him. And now he had a really great year. He's going to win another MVP. He's a quarterback that I think a lot of people don't expect to win a Super Bowl because he's not your standard quarterback. He's a running quarterback. He leads his team in rushing on the team with the most rushing yards in the NFL. Like that's crazy. But at the same time, I would like to see him get over this hurdle and beat the Kansas City Chiefs and get into the Super Bowl. Also, as a Lions fan, if I go into the night game and see that the winner is the Ravens and that's who we'd be playing in the Super Bowl, I'm feeling better. I know that's going to make people sound, think I'm crazy because we lost 38-6 to the Ravens the first time. Good teams do not get blown out by good teams twice in the same season. There are so many adjustments for the Lions.
Yeah, but you, it's funny because you guys got blown out by the Ravens, but you also, and you also beat the Chiefs. And then the excuse was, oh, they didn't have Travis Kelce. Well, yeah, Travis, the Chiefs didn't have Travis Kelce all year anyway. Like, he was a ghost.
Yeah, and they didn't have Chris Jones. So they didn't have Chris Jones,
which is a little, it's a pretty big deal.
But I'm just saying, I don't think that we have as good of a chance against the Chiefs, because also in that Chiefs game, a lot of our defense looked good because of how many drops the Chiefs had. The Chiefs dropped so many passes in that game that would have changed the outcome of that game. But with the Lions playing Baltimore, there are so many adjustments to make. That is a team that would be hungry the second time out. And Lamar Jackson is easier to play the second time you play him. The Texans showed that in the first half of this game. In the second half, they got blown out, but the Texans just had nothing going for them. But Lamar Jackson in the first half struggled. And that is because he is easier to play against the second time you play him. The Browns beat him the second time they played him. I mean, the Steelers beat him the first time playing, but the Steelers see him every year. He is easier the more you see him because you know what his tendencies are, and you can't plan for his speed. I want the Ravens to win this game. I think the Ravens can win this game. I think they have a legitimate chance. The only bet I'd be placing on this game, though, is the Chiefs +3.5. Because if the Chiefs lose by more than a field goal in this game, this just wasn't that good of a team all year. I really think that with Mahomes having been there, with this whole team having been there, that is what we're going to get. And pressure's on the Ravens. The same way the pressure's on the Niners, the pressure is on the Ravens. Like, the Ravens, Lamar Jackson needs to get over the hump. He needs to get to a Super Bowl. That is where the pressure lies this time. The Chiefs have been there, done that. So I think that the Chiefs are coming in loose. They just already won a road playoff game. That's not the storyline coming into this game. But I still think the Ravens are going to squeak out the win. I think they have enough talent. I think they can control the clock. They're so good at running the ball. And I think that the Chiefs just ultimately, offensively, aren't going to be able to do enough against the Ravens defense. I think the Ravens defense is too good. So I think the Ravens win, but the only bet I'm making is Chiefs +3.5.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on Chiefs +3.5. I think it's going to be a close game. Yeah, 1-point game, 2-point game, field goal game, anything, you know. I don't think it's going to go much higher than that either direction. It is weird though. It's like this is one game. Like, they're going to play football for 60 minutes and then we're like, you know, Lamar Ravens could win, but if they lose, it's like his whole legacy is like decided by this one game. It doesn't do the players justice because it is one and done in the NFL, and that's it. And that's why these games are so big, and that's why the stakes are so high. But we see, I mean, plays can go either way, like a penalty call or a missed penalty call, a bobble, a helmet catch. Like, there are just so many things over the course of a football game that could happen that, for whatever reason, we like dictate everyone's legacy based on 60 minutes of like this chaos of people running into each other and throwing balls in the air. And I get that's the sport, but I think we all need to just like chill and let this play over out, you know, multiple years and multiple seasons. It's not like Lamar Jackson has been to, you know, 6 AFC title games and has lost them all. Or, you know what, I think this is his first one, but it's not like
he's never been to a title game.
You know, they've even made the playoffs a couple times. So it's like, let's be happy that they're in the AFC championship game. And hey, maybe Dak Prescott, you look at him and it's like, okay, he hasn't been able to get it done. He's had one playoff win, I think. So, and they get to the playoffs every year. So maybe there's something to look at. We can take a look at the whole over like a course of 5 or 6 years, but to just boil a lot of these people down into, hey, if Lamar doesn't win this game, he's never going to win a Super Bowl ever, or we can't trust him in the playoffs. It's like, look who he's going against. Like, one of these teams has to win. The other team is trying too. Patrick Mahomes is a formidable opponent here. So if Lamar loses this game, I don't think it should be some career defining legacy game for him, even though he hasn't been there before. And look, he's got a good team. He's a good player. You're going to have another 10 seasons in this league to get it done. And maybe when it's all said and done, he never got there. Maybe he didn't have it in him, but you know, it's his first AFC championship game. Let's kind of settle down on that, because that's going to happen.
Yeah. And like we're going to talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame. And I think the problem with Hall of Fames and greatest of all time and all of that stuff, and the NFL does it too, is like, if you don't win a ring, you're not the greatest of all time. Dan Marino threw for 5,000 yards, 4,860 yards, or whatever his record was, and 48 touchdowns when nobody had thrown for 4,000 yards yet in the NFL. Like, Dak, like nobody on the Cowboys, what was it, the Niners this year? Nobody had ever thrown for 4,000 yards in a season until Brock Purdy just did it. And they have Joe Montana and Steve Young. Mm-hmm. It's like the NFL used to
and
be
he
such
did
a
that,
different game.
He did that before,
the extra 18, game. Yeah,
before the week 18 game.
But it used to, it's such a different game right now. It's so different. And so much pressure goes on to the quarterbacks and stuff. But I think the whole, if you haven't won a Super Bowl, if you don't win a championship, like you're not one of the all-time greats. Dan Marino runs circles around any of these teams. If Dan Marino was the quarterback for the Niners in the 90s, oh my God, he would have been insane. He was ridiculous anyway. He never had Jerry Rice. If he was the quarterback for the Cowboys with Michael Irvin and then a running back like Emmitt Smith, are you kidding me? And that's where I think like Lamar right now is just gets shit on week after week after week after week. And it's like, look, Lamar is interesting because it feels like the pundits want to make excuses for Lamar when he has a bad game. And then Brock Purdy, they want to say, well, that's the norm when he has a bad game. And I think, but then when Lamar gets to this situation, all of a sudden he starts to get, oh, he can't win the big one. He can't win the big one. Why do you have to be able to win the big one right away? Peyton Manning didn't win the big one until what? 9 years in, 10 years into his career. It's so insane. It's so insane. And Forrest says here, Will's argument could also apply to Josh Allen. The Bills haven't made it yet either. And Josh Allen, everybody wants to call the MVP over Lamar Jackson in the regular season. And he played terrible. He led the league in interceptions or was second in the league behind Sam Howell. It's just that type of stuff drives me so insane because it's like it bleeds into what happened with college football this year. It was the pundits felt like they had a bigger impact on what actually took place. Let the players play. You're talking for a living. That's like when we do this podcast, I know that we're just blabbing, man. But like, let the players play the game. Lamar Jackson, I hope Lamar Jackson goes out there and runs for 200 yards this weekend and leads his team to a victory. But if they lose by 3 points to the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, okay, like what are you going to do?
Yeah, someone's got to win. It's like someone's got to lose. Like we know going in, one of these teams is losing. And so it's hard to like, you know, it's hard to hold that. It's hard to hold it against them, really. I mean, especially like one loss like this. Again, if it's like over in 10 years, we can look back and make some arguments and some points based on like the total knowledge we have of someone's career. But while we're right in the middle of it, we can tone it.
And remember, John Elway was a disappointment too. And then he won two Super Bowls in what, his last 2 years? Like,
yeah, back to back.
Back to back. It's amazing how that stuff works. Forrest DeGroat, give me the Ravens -3.5 and Lamar over 64.5. And then Jordan Alford says, if Lamar plays well but loses, he gets a pass. But if he lays an egg, it's sketchy. It's like, yeah, like so you're going to have bad games in the NFL. And it's just amazing who they focus on as having a bad game. And it feels like Jared Goff, Brock Purdy.
Those I think are the that types is a fair point, though. On. It like depends. It depends how you play. Like it doesn't seem like Josh Allen is taking as much heat here. And then some of the other games, like when he didn't get the ball in the overtime 2 years ago, like he didn't take that much heat. It's like, what do you want him to do? But
if you're going to try to tell
in
me
in totality, you're like, oh, Josh Allen's, you know, never made it to the Super Bowl. And that does add up and people do talk about it.
Yeah. And I mean, look, all the people who want to use analytics to determine whether or not interceptions matter and all that stuff. All I know is that Josh Allen ended this season with 18 interceptions. He threw an interception in all but three regular season games. It's terrible. Like, that's terrible. It doesn't matter who you are. That's terrible. And I understand some of those are going to be Hail Marys or fourth downs or whatever. But 18 interceptions in a season is really bad. And, like, you can use any analytic you want, but at the end of the day, he threw 18 interceptions. So I really don't. And he didn't make the Super Bowl. And he didn't make the AFC Championship game. Josh Allen just might not be the guy for the Bills, but I know that's not really a conversation. So you're saying Chiefs, you're taking Chiefs. I'll go Ravens win, but I think
what's the total? What's the total? What are we at?
The total is 50. No, the total is 44.5.
I was going to say 50. Holy smokes.
Yeah. I like the under those in defenses, this game. I do like the under in this
I
game.
I like the under, but both these offenses are, they can have explosive plays where it's, they just zip. They're 70 yards down the field. And
I'm not going to bet the under. I just like the under.
Yeah, it seems like the smarter play, but these games, anything goes. Yeah. So I'll stick with I'll take the points in the Chiefs.
Yeah. Jordan Alford said, have you met Brett Farfield? I've not met him, but I will say he's probably the most overrated quarterback in the history of the NFL. Because his stats were because of longevity, not because he was actually like as amazing as those stats say.
Like LeBron.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. There we go. We can have a whole LeBron conversation another day. Just throw that in. All right, you want to jump over to this Baseball Hall of Fame disaster so we can have fun with this?
Sure. And I don't know if we need to break down the Hall of Fame as much as maybe we just give our thoughts and opinions on baseball overall. I mean, we'll start with the Hall of Fame, and I'm definitely down to let this thing kind of spread out in a conversation maybe about baseball, its place in sports, its place in culture, and all the changes that we're seeing in the sport.
Why don't you let me lead it, buddy? Okay.
That's what I'm saying. You lead. We start with the Hall of Fame.
No, I want to say this. It's a tree. I do want to say this. It's an onion. I feel like it's an onion. Onions branch.
It's layers. Layers.
Layers. Ogres are like onions. I think the biggest problem I've noticed with the Baseball Hall of Fame, look, I don't care. Hall of Fames are such nonsense at this point anyway. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's like Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame, NFL Hall of Fame. It doesn't matter. It's like, do people like you enough to put you in? Sure. The biggest problem with what baseball has done with their Hall of Fame, because they just announced their newest class, and their newest class, the three players who ended up making it, who were voted in. Well, it's four people who were voted in, but one was a coach, which is Jim Leland, who deserves it. But then you have Adrian Beltre, Todd Helton, and Joe Mauer. And look, Joe Mauer, great, great catcher, deserves to get in the Hall of Fame because he was probably the best catcher for a lot of the years he was playing. Maybe second best, but he was up there. Todd Helton and Adrian Beltre. The biggest problem I have with how this has gone in recent years, though, with the Baseball Hall of Fame and with the whole steroid thing is by allowing writers to be the ones who vote on this, because that's how it's always been, to have it be the baseball media vote to put people in. They don't realize, I think, how much they have to lose with this. And I think what's happening with the Baseball Hall of Fame and how almost an entire generation of probably the most exciting baseball's ever been in the history of the sport is being eliminated from the sport is why baseball is in dire straits right now and why nobody gives a shit about it. Because all these great people we grew up watching, Alex Rodriguez, Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Curt Schilling, Roger Clemens, they're not in. And they're never going to get in. And like, I understand why people don't want to put them in because it was like steroids. But if they're all on steroids, like, good for you for being able to blast a home run off of Roger Clemens, and good for Roger Clemens for being able to strike out a roided up Barry Bonds. Like, good for them. My biggest thing is, though, by doing this, it just got to the point where it's like, who cares about Adrian Beltre, Todd Helton, and Joe Mauer getting into the Hall of Fame when you're not going to put those other players I just said in? And how are you going to build up interest in the sport when your stars from previous eras don't matter? I mean, look at Peyton Manning right now. Peyton Manning and Eli Manning have their own show during Monday Night Football where they talk, they comment on the game and have people come on and do all of that. That is respecting your old players. And I know Alex Rodriguez gets to do his little, like, you know, show with David Ortiz and stuff on Fox, but, or TBS, whatever it is. But by not putting them in, you're not revering them the way that they should be revered. And it really does hurt the history of your sport. And I think baseball is just done.
And look at Peyton Manning's forehead.
It's huge.
Tell me he didn't do HGH.
All right, come on. Give me a response here.
No, I'm with you. I think the Hall of Fame not allowing the steroid players in is total bullshit. Obviously, I'm a Giants fan. So, you know, I grew up watching Barry Bonds, Jeff Kent, JT Snow, Rich Realia, all those teams. I saw Omar Vizquel was on the ballot this year. He didn't quite sneak in there. That's probably going to be a tough one. Here's the deal. The Hall of Fame is supposed to tell the story of your sport. It's supposed to be like, look at all these players back here, back in the day when the sport started. You have these black and white photos. Look at these rules. Look at these stadiums. Like, look at all this. This is how it was played. Here's a jersey from this game. Remember this game? And then you move through the eras. And it's basically you are building a time capsule for your sport that is logging the greatest moments, the greatest players, the greatest memorabilia, all of that. So by just ignoring an entire generation of baseball does not serve that purpose of what a Hall of Fame should be. It doesn't fulfill that. So, I mean, there's some people, some experts, as they call them, or MLB insiders that have said at the height of the steroid era, there was like about 90% of the players in baseball were on steroids. So, and I get it's cheating, and I get it was against the rules, but if 90% of the player base, and hey, maybe that's not true, maybe it was 50% or maybe 30 or whatever, there were enough players doing it where I think it's, we can look at it and say, okay, well, the best players on steroids were still the best players of that era. It's not like Barry Bonds would have sucked at baseball without steroids. You still have to look at the ball and make contact and swing. You know how hard that is? And just because when he hits it, it goes a little bit further, maybe like what, like 5% further, 10% further at most. Look, that's like, you're still eliminating great, great people from the sport. There's this series I see on Instagram, and maybe I think it originated on TikTok, but it's like a series called Barry Bonds Stats that when they're read, they seem fake or made up. I have a couple of them brought up. The first one is, hold on, I gotta play this video.
All right, well, I'm going to say this. Forrest DeGrote here, he says, reminds me of the Lance Armstrong situation where they said in a documentary that to find someone not on roids, they'd award like the 64th person. And that's pretty much what this was. It was like, yeah, it was the steroid era, but like, should they be considered better than Babe Ruth? Probably not. But was Alex Rodriguez, you can't sit here and tell me Alex Rodriguez wasn't one of the greatest players or one of the most important players for 20 years.
So from 2001 to 2004, 39.5% of Barry Bonds at bats were either walks or home runs. Like, that is insane. 40. I mean, that's people, if you're batting 290, that's great. And that's getting hit. This is getting a home run or a walk in close to 40% of
that's not even counting his regular hits. Like, his on base percentage is almost 50% at that point.
Yeah. And then Barry Bonds has been intentionally walked 688 times in his career. That's more than the entire Tampa Bay Rays organization combined. 668 to 663.
Congratulations to them for passing Barry Bonds in 2024. They will do it. I believe in that.
Yeah. All right. Here's another one. So he was the seventh player to have 200 home runs and 200 stolen bases, the fourth player to have 300 home runs and 300 stolen bases, and the only player to have 400 stolen bases and 400 home runs. And the only guy in baseball history to have 500 home runs and 500 stolen bases. So it's like, that guy's not in the Hall of Fame. You think 500 stolen bases plus 756 home runs? Like, what are we doing? What are we talking about? You can go on and on with these. There was one video. It was like, if Barry Bonds' whole career, if he didn't play with a bat in his hand, like, he just didn't have a bat, so it was just his walks, basically. Like, he would still have been like an MVP level player, pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, and one of the things that really bothers me is, like, for instance, Mariano Rivera is the only player to ever be unanimously selected to the Hall of Fame, and he deserves it. I mean, Mariano Rivera is the greatest closer of all time. I know Billy Wagner is getting close here to getting into the Hall of Fame, and hopefully he does. Billy Wagner does deserve to be in. He just missed it this year because he got 73.8% of the vote and needs 75% of the vote. What bothers me with this, though, is let's look at when Derek Jeter got into the Hall of Fame, right? It was right during the COVID year, so I think he got inducted in 2020. You ask any person ever if Derek Jeter's a Hall of Famer, you're going to get your Red Sox fans who are going to bitch about Derek Jeter. Oh, it was only because he was on this team or whatever. It doesn't matter. He had all the hits. He has the World Series rings. He has the clutch. He had the defensive plays. Like, Derek Jeter is a Hall of Famer. He missed out on being unanimously selected by one vote. And what bothers me is, why does the writer, like, congratulations to that baseball writer who is the one person who didn't cast a vote for Derek Jeter to get in the Hall of Fame. Pat yourself on the back. Congratulations, you did it. You can sleep so well, and you can be that arrogant guy at the dinner who's swirling your wine explaining why you didn't do it. Congrats on being different. You're also wrong, and you're an idiot. Like, you shouldn't have a vote in this. And I think that's what annoys me, is you have people who vote for the Hall of Fame who will do stuff as stupid as, well, I won't vote for somebody on their first three ballots.
Why?
And like, why do you get to be the one who determines that? The MLB needs to figure out. Jordan Alford says Griffey also got with like 99%. Yeah, Ken Griffey Jr. is a Hall of Famer. Ken Griffey Jr. is in no doubt, no brain.
I mean, yeah, didn't Babe Ruth, he got like 97%. So there's like 3% of voters who were like, yeah. nah, but I don't think Babe Ruth is in that first class.
They were nominating so many people. I think it was so much different and all that. But like Ryan says, it needs to be the coaches and players who vote. The problem is by having the writers vote and knowing that they all have their agendas and there's some people who will never vote for anybody from the steroid era, which like, good, that's to each their own. But knowing that and then also seeing them not vote 100%. But here's the thing. To also have that and then add in that you won't get 100% of people voting for Derek Jeter and 100% of people voting for Ken Griffey Jr., you have no merit. You are clowns. Put on your gigantic red nose before you go to work tomorrow morning because that's how you need to show up in public. There is no way, and nobody can take it seriously because there's already agendas behind the scenes for all of this. And that's not what the Baseball Hall of Fame should be. Why are we giving power to these power-hungry people? What have they done to earn the right to say whether or not Derek Jeter, Roger Clemens, Ken Griffey Jr., Mariano Rivera, or freaking Todd Helton are Hall of Famers? They haven't done anything. They sat there and they typed behind their computer. It's a joke. It's so stupid, and they need to change it. And the baseball writers, like the ones who will post their ballots just so they'll get clicks and stuff, like, go away. Nobody cares about you. Nobody remembers your name.
I mean, baseball is dying, man. And for me, baseball hit a death like no other when they converted the NL to have the DH. To me, mm-hmm. I thought that was a really interesting part of the sport, that two leagues could have different rules and they are very different ways of playing the game. I thought mm-hmm. the NL game, which is much more strategic, and yeah, we're not watching home runs fly out of the park, but that's what the game's kind of become, is like who can hit the most home runs. And like the NL was way more, you know, are you going to pull your pitcher because, you know, you need to, you're going to get someone on base and your starter's playing great, but you got to cash in on these runs because runs are tough to come by. Maybe you got to move a guy over with the bunt. You got to double switch when the pitcher spot comes up. You have to think strategically, and you're actually in these dilemmas on, are you going to favor defense or offense? And now it's just like, let's just hit as many home runs as possible, which is just not as interesting or has not much thought or intrigue. And there's a lot of these changes with baseball. Some I'm more okay with. I think the speed of the game, I get it. Like, it is a product.
I like that. I think that was necessary.
I'm good with that. But I think what baseball is trying to be is it's trying to be like football or even basketball in some respects and be like this national sport. That's its goal. It's goal to be, you know, full of highlights and stars and have everyone follow it. And that's fine. But that's just never what baseball has been, because there are 162 games per team each season. It's always been a localized sport where you get behind your team. You have them on every day in the summer. I mean, I remember growing up as a kid, you have that game on in the background. Mm-hmm. And I didn't care that it was 3 hours or 3.5 hours. Like, it's fine. It's on there in the background. When there's people on base, you can pay a little bit closer attention, or you can, maybe it's a big game against a rival, you can really sit down and lock in, but it's on every day and you can mm-hmm. follow your team, and you're following it with your peers locally. It was never supposed to be, you know, people watching Twins games in Los Angeles and being really excited when Joe Mauer hits a home run. Like, that's never what the sport was meant to be. But because of social media and the internet, I feel like it's trying to be something that it's not. And I think, look, okay, football, NFL, we just had a playoff game get 40 million viewers at its peak. That's not what baseball is going to be. Football is a national sport where you can follow the whole league, because guess what? The whole league plays on one day a week for 18 of the year. Football or baseball, you are literally all of April, May, June, July, August, September. Then
6-7 days a week, every single week.
Days a week, at least 6 days a week. Sometimes it's 7 days a week. You can't follow your own team that much, let alone follow the entire league. So it is a localized thing. Like, I could tell you a boatload of Giants players' names because I watched them growing up. But if you ask me, like, who are the other players in the league, I didn't really care. Like, American League teams, I had no idea who these players were, especially if we didn't have interleague matchups. It was a thing the city or your community could get behind, and that was fine. I think that's what its place was. And then, you know, again, like I said, football is fully national. You can follow the whole league. Basketball is kind of in the middle. Basketball is more like star driven. Like, you have your big mm-hmm. star. We'll play a couple nationalized national TV games on weeknights and some big weekend games. But it's all about star power. And then it became highlights and social media. But like, this isn't what baseball was ever meant to be. Yeah. So I feel like it's going in a direction where it's like, let's tighten up these games. Let's make it shorter. Let's just have quick home runs, get rid of any strategy or thought, and just kind of mosey through.
You know what would help?
But it's like, damn, I kind of like the long form of baseball where you just have it on. It's on every day and you can get behind your team as a city. Go ahead.
You know what would help with the home runs and stuff? Steroids. If more people did steroids, that would help big time with the home.
But I don't even want like people. Just
I'm just messing. I'm messing with you because it's funny like, that's what they're going for, and then the league wants. Yeah, it's funny because they're shunning. And again, this goes back to the Hall of Fame problem. You don't talk about anybody except your home run hitters right now, and your ace pitchers. That's all anybody talks about. However, you are telling us that an entire generation of people who hit the most home runs in the history of the league don't matter. Put it, say the steroid era in the Hall of Fame. Look, in 400 years, this shit's not going to matter anyway. So just do what you have to do and put these people in. I want to bring this one up.
If you're watching highlights, Phil, the best highlights, like baseball.
Diving tonight, catchers.
Yeah. Baseball Tonight, that was their ESPN's flagship baseball program on every single night.
Let's look at
the five best home runs. It's web gems. Let's look at the best five defensive plays, whether they were throws at the plate, diving catches, plays at the wall, double plays, like whatever it was, but, you know, jumping into the stands. Like, that's really fun to watch. Home runs are all the same. It's just, woo, you swing the bat, and we know what is going to happen. It's going to end in a going out of the park, everyone goes crazy. Like I feel like we're focusing on the wrong part of baseball, and it needs to find its roots. That's my rant anyway. I don't know if I'm right. That's my opinion. Like,
let me just bring this up.
Doesn't need to serve all these different things.
Let me ask you this. Okay. And this is something that I really do need to. Yeah. So Jordan Alford says you could treat it like the dead ball era when pitcher stats are inflated. Exactly. So now it's the steroid era. And the fact that Clemens was striking all these batters out, whether he's roided up or not, the fact that he's doing that up against these hitters who are all on steroids is crazy. Aaron Judge has been in the league 8 years. Aaron Judge hit 62 home runs in a year. Aaron Judge hit 52 home runs in another year. Do you think that Aaron Judge could be a Hall of Famer? I'm asking you this. You don't have to like get too into it. Just a yes or no. Do you think he could be? He could be, right?
For sure. Obviously.
Okay, good. I'm just making sure. He has struck out 1,038 times. I'm doing this so I can really show how the game has changed. Okay. He has struck out 1,038 times. He has 3,005 at bats. So 1/3 of his at bats. Now those aren't his plate appearances because he's walked also a lot, but 1/3 of his at bats are strikeouts. Okay. And he has 257 home runs. That's less than 10% of his at bats are home runs. So 1/3 are strikeouts, less than 10% are home runs. Do you know the Tony Gwynn stats?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Tony Gwynn has 9,288 at bats. 9,288. Aaron Judge was 3,005. Tony Gwynn struck out 434 times in his career.
Damn.
In his career, the most strikeouts he ever had in a season was 40. Okay.
How many home runs, Phil? How many home runs? That's all I care about.
So the home runs, he had 135. That was it. 135.
Yeah, he sucks.
He sucks, right?
He didn't hit enough home runs. Yeah.
Like, you've taken out this element of sports that is so phenomenal. If Aaron Judge was playing in the 80s and 90s, he probably would be starting a third of the games because it wasn't all about that. They would say, dude, you strike out of the third of the time you walk up to the plate. We can't trust you. It was about actually getting hits.
I'm sure Aaron Judge would cater his game differently.
Absolutely. I mean, Jordan Alford says that here. The high strikeout rates are because guys aren't swinging just for contact anymore. No, that's for sure. But why aren't they swinging just for contact? Because that's not what people want on the field anymore. And actually, that's hurt baseball, not helped it, as they try to become more explosive.
No, because it's not these rallies and runs where you get another guy on base, then you move a guy over and you sack. It's like it's all just strikeout, home run.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoever thinks that's more interesting to watch, like, good for you, but I could not disagree
more. And look, Babe Ruth is probably the greatest home run hitter of all time. We know he wasn't on steroids. We know he was eating like crap, and he's hitting 62 home runs in a season. However, or 60 home runs in a season. However, we can't actually watch footage of Babe Ruth hitting home runs. Okay, we can't. Like, you can watch random clip here and there, but you can't actually see Babe Ruth walk up to the plate and hit a home run. The greatest home run hitter we have ever seen is either Hank Aaron or Barry Bonds. It's one of those two people. Those are the only two people we can watch. And we're not even allowed to talk about Barry Bonds anymore. And we can't talk about Mark McGwire. And we can't talk about Sammy Sosa or Rafael Palmeiro, who, by the way, was an asshole during the steroid.
Sammy Sosa might even be on a, like, I could get Sammy Sosa because of the cork bat thing plus the steroids.
Yeah.
Like, he had a little bit worse of an offense, like, in addition to what everyone else was doing. But if you only did say, if that's your only offense was steroids, like, yeah.
I mean, and A-Rod, you can't talk about Alex Rodriguez hitting his home runs. I mean, what did Alex Rodriguez end up hitting 700?
I don't think so.
He was, yeah, I don't think he did either. I'm trying to find it real quick. But, like, so you're talking Barry Bonds, Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth. Great, we can talk about all them. Albert Pujols at 703. Albert Pujols is going to be a Hall of Famer. Alex Rodriguez, 696. We can't talk about him.
And then Willie Mays is somewhere up there.
Then Willie Mays, then Ken Griffey Jr., Jim Thome, then Sammy Sosa, 609. Can't talk about him. Mark McGwire, 583. Can't talk about him. Rafael Palmeiro, 569. Can't talk about him. Manny Ramirez, 555 home runs, not in the Hall of Fame.
Roided.
Like, David Ortiz is in with 541, and good for David Ortiz. But you're talking some of the best home run hitters of all time we can't even talk about anymore because they did steroids and all that. And they're not going to make the Hall of Fame, and we're supposed to ignore that. But then at the same time, those are the people that if you're a young kid today, you should be going back and watching highlights of that the same way I go back and watch highlights of Marino or something along those lines from football. Like, if I'm more into football, I'm going to go watch highlights of these quarterbacks I couldn't watch. Montana, who I was only seeing in my youth, Steve Young, Troy Aikman. Like, I don't know what these quarterbacks actually look like, so I'll go back and watch highlights. The players that the youth would be going back and watch highlights of now, because the game is so catered to home runs, aren't Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter didn't hit home runs. And you already don't have Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, and that was for the gambling shit and all of that, but you already don't have Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. And now you're not going to have some of the greatest pitchers and some of the greatest hitters because you have a bunch of snobs who want attention and want to be the gatekeepers. And it's a joke. It's an absolute sham. And you're never going to get the game to rebound from the disastrous situation it's in right now if these people are never going to let the home run hitters from the era of home runs that really made baseball into what it is today into the Hall of Fame.
How do you feel about pace of play and all that stuff?
I think
like, I'm here for part of it, but also part of me feels like, okay, if the games were 3 hours or 3.5 hours, way too long, right? But now they're 2 hours, 45 minutes or whatever, and then I'm just making up these numbers. But it's getting faster. The whole point's like, oh, the TikTok generation and Gen Z and the attention spans, it's like, they're still not going to watch a 2-hour and 45-minute game.
Well, and when do they become baseball fans, right? They become baseball fans as they get older when they want to sit down and watch it with their dad or with their uncle or with their grandpa or something like that. Like, they're not watching it when they're 12 years old.
It's okay if not every generation likes it. I know we need to continue the sport. It's not like no one's watching it. We have enough fans.
Kids are still playing it.
Yeah, kids are playing it. Kids are at ball games, and the numbers might not be great, but it's like at some point it's like you can't throw away everything great about the game to cater, like, then you're gonna ruin it like forever, then no one's gonna like it, and then it's where's it gonna go from there.
I agree with Jordan 100% on this.
I do like
this good thing, and here's the thing, I'm a Yankees fan. Yankees games were unwatchable, dude. They'd be 4 hours and 25 minutes because of all of the ads and stuff that would get put into them and everything. Like, you'd be getting over at 11:30 at night for a 7 o'clock start game, and you're like, what the hell? It was a regular season game.
Yeah, no, and I'm good with that. I'm good with it to an extent. When you go to a game, I don't know when the last time you've been to a game is, but you can feel it. Like, you go out of your seat, you go out of your seat to get a beer, you come back, you missed a full inning. Like, both teams coming up to bat, like, that can turn people off from coming in person. It's like, especially if you don't live close to the stadium or have to take public transportation, and then you are commuting in, let's say, an hour away to watch a game. You're spending all this money on the tickets, then on food, on beer, getting a souvenir for your kid, getting cotton candy, and then it's like I miss
but two and a half hours is a very normal sports time. That's what the NBA is, that's what college basketball is. Like, that is like the NFL is the only sport that's longer than 2.5 hours. So I think that's fine. I do want
to
say,
I don't know. I feel like baseball, just for people who have gone to games, they feel like, I've been to hundreds of baseball games. It feels very quick. And more to this point, I do appreciate the pitch clock. I think it is needed. But things that are coming in the future, what they're doing in the minor leagues now is they have automatic balls and strikes. And so
that's stupid. That I don't like.
I do like that because I like getting it right. I think the big problem with
human error is a part of sports, though. You need to have it.
I don't know. My big thing with it, Phil, and we can disagree on this, obviously, but like the fact that when you're watching the game on TV and you see the box with
the grid, shouldn't have the box
and you see it so clearly, everyone at home can see if it's a ball or strike. So we're just,
but the problem is this,
these minor errors by umpire. Let me finish. That we're taking these minor errors by umpires that are literally inches off, and then we are like showing it to putting it on full display to the whole world and emphasizing it. And like, that's not fair. And it's like, if we can know instantaneously whether it's a ball or strike, then why don't we do that? And so in the minor leagues, they do that. They still have an ump back there because they need to make plays at the plate if there's a throw or anything, and then other, you know, batter's interference or catcher's interference or whatever you want to say. But they will then have an earpiece and they will call it. And I think that's only on weekend games. And then on weekday games, it will just come up on the screen immediately. They don't even have an umpire call it. Like, it just pops up and it's just understood. And then on the weekend, they actually have the umpire there to make the game longer because the game is going too quickly. Like, that's where at the point in the minor league games, it's going too quickly that they can't have people come. They don't have enough time to sell concessions or souvenirs and all that. So I'm just saying, in the pipeline for baseball, it's becoming a very, very high-speed sport. I don't know if going fully that way is necessary.
That is really stupid, and here's why that's stupid. It's too easy for the hitters. Because what the whole point of having human error, they shouldn't have that box up there because that box is what is technically the plate, right? That is technically the plate. That's technically their knees. And that's technically up by the top of their chest. But here's the thing.
Subjective, yeah.
But here's the thing. There's accuracy. What is it? It's accuracy and validity. For anybody who's like a scientist, it's accuracy and validity. Accuracy is one thing. Whatever the other word is, it's not validity.
Consistency.
Consistency, whatever it is. But there's going to be umpires who are going to have a wider strike zone. There's going to be umpires who are going to have a tighter strike zone. There's going to be umpires who are a little bit more inconsistent. Inconsistent is bad, but a wider strike zone and a tighter strike zone is good because there are going to be some umpires who favor pitchers. There's going to be some umpires who favor hitters. There's going to be some umpires who have a high strike zone, who have a low strike zone, but that is a part of it. If you get to the point where it's, that is a strike because the robot says it's a strike, well, the hitters now know every single time what is going to be a called strike. It's too easy. The pitchers have to hit that spot. If you're a great pitcher, part of what makes you a great pitcher is knowing the umpire that's calling your game and getting the calls you need to get from that umpire. If you know he's calling it a little bit outside all game, keep going outside. That is what you should be doing as a great pitcher. If you have that accuracy to throw out there, that's what you should be doing. I think robot umps is stupid. I think it absolutely, it's like you're not technically getting it right at that point. It's just that is what we have determined the zone is. I don't think that's good for baseball. I think that's a weak point. And I think it takes away a lot of the strategy of what baseball is supposed to be. It takes away one of the only compelling things about baseball.
I hear you fully on that. I just think as a product and as more people gamble on sports and it gets married to sports,
it will kill baseball
and everything. Having so many of these really blatant calls that we can see wrong instantly on TV, it is so frustrating to watch modern baseball in some of these strike zones. And I wish we could have human error, but the human error is so vast and it's so inconsistent. And that is the biggest problem. You'll have one inning, a really tight zone, and then another inning, a really wide zone. And it's almost impossible for players to play it. And if you have a completely objective zone that is right or wrong, then you can't complain. And it's a more fair and truer game. And look, pitchers are already dominating anyway. Like, if you give a little bit more nod to offense, which is what baseball wants, I don't think that's like the worst thing. We already saw them make the bases bigger, which honestly seems a little bit insane. Like, I think that was kind of crazy just because we have all these, you know, just for the tradition.
That was more for safety, I think, than anything, too.
I don't know. Just
you're not sliding into people standing there.
We've been doing this for over 100 years, man.
Hey, dude, like, they're trying to make the game more modern and their family.
I get. No, they made it bigger to make stealing marginally easier because you have a bigger target and the distance is now shorter between the plates. I don't think that really had an influence, and we have just all this tradition and stats of stolen bases that now don't mean anything in comparison to what we're doing now. So I don't know. I think a lot of these changes, I like some of them. I get what they're doing, but man, I think baseball honestly needs to like embrace its uniqueness, kind of stay in its lane and embrace the things that makes it different, and maybe makes it why it's not a national sport, and lean into the localization and like the really intense community and like home runs and strikeouts. I don't think that's the answer. And if the game keeps speeding up too, I don't know really where that's going to end up, where that's going to lead to.
Brett Cotton here is just popping in, because I always save this and the traders for when I'm bored at work. Thanks for the extra pods, loving the extra free content. Thanks, Brett. If you want to like the video, subscribe to the channel. If you haven't subscribed to the channel yet and you're listening to the Phil and Will Show, please subscribe to the channel. It really helps us out. So please go listen.
Also, if you're listening on a podcast, say on Spotify or iTunes or any other podcast, Brett, reviews are good, but it seems like close to 80% of the Phil and Will Show, that's where the listeners are more. Audio podcast. We do this on video on YouTube. So if you ever want to come see our ugly faces and check out my Niner robe.
But also leave a 5-star review. If you're listening over there, please do, because that really does help us across the board. And
that's true. Good.
That really does help us. So please leave the reviews. We don't really talk about that enough on these shows, but
we're pretty bad at that. We also don't
started talking about it more, and people actually started subscribing. Like I mentioned it on that one podcast last week, and we gained like 60 subscribers like overnight, and I was like, damn, we haven't gained 60 subscribers in like a year, because we never mentioned to do it. So please subscribe, please like the video, that really helps us. I just want to close out kind of this thing. I know this started with Baseball Hall of Fame and then it got to wherever we are now, but I do want to close with this. Brett Cott says, what are your thoughts on the Shohei Ohtani contract? I feel like baseball is a broken sport with no salary floor or cap. I think that this is, again, getting into does baseball want to be what every other sport is, or does it want to be its own thing? And I don't think it knows right now. And I think a lot of that goes to the history of it. In the 90s and 2000s, baseball was super popular. Like the 90s and like early 2000s, baseball was incredibly popular. And baseball has fallen out of popularity. And as they've fallen out of popularity, what I think they're failing to realize is during its most popular time, a lot of those players, again, have just been disregarded. Like, we're not supposed to talk about them. They're not Hall of Famers. We can't have a conversation about, are they an all-time great? Because, oh, well, they were on steroids. But the thing is, you need to find a middle ground here. You need to find a way to make this work. And speeding up the game, I think, is a good thing. I work a lot of baseball games at, you know, college levels. And having that pitch clock has made my life so much better when I go to these games, because you know you're not going to get a 4-hour game. I think that's good. I think it's very hypocritical and funny that it also revealed that baseball used to not sell alcohol after the 7th inning, but now they'll do it after the 8th inning so people have more time to drink. So it was never actually about safety. It was just about, you know, they would claim it was about safety, but now you're going to move it back even though the game is moving faster because your sales are going down. So now they're going to push it back and make it more dangerous. I thought that was pretty telling and funny. And I just think, like, I agree with you. The localization is important because, yeah, everybody talks about Mike Trout right now, but nobody really watches Mike Trout play baseball. There's not many people who actually watch Mike Trout play baseball unless you live in Los Angeles, which, by the way, if you live in Los Angeles, you don't actually live in the same county as where the Angels play. So it's like you have to be more localized, and you have to do that, and you have to be more supportive, and there has to be that excitement around that. I just think at this point, like, do I want a salary cap? I don't know. It's a whole nother conversation, and it's almost midnight here on the East Coast.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that's what makes baseball unique.
But at least like
a limit.
The Shohei thing is a bunch. It's a big load of crap. I mean, it's a loophole. It's like, we're not going to pay you until later when your contract's over,
when you're not,
and then that won't add against our luxury tax or our tax.
It's BS.
So it's a complete loophole. I think baseball will do something about it. I hope they do. I mean, I hate the Dodgers. Like, I hate them with a passion. They just buy every good player. I think it does. I think baseball, it would be in their best interest to have to even the playing field a little bit. Now, like, you know, the NBA has like a soft apron and then a hard apron at the second one. So I think there's ways where you can like still give your big city, you know, big market franchises the opportunity to go get the stars that they want, but you also want some of the smaller market teams to be able to keep their stars and bring in free agents, and so that you have these like when the Royals out of nowhere were like really good from like 2013 to 2015 It's like a spark. It's like they got so into it and then they've now just they're just done. Some of these, like when these smaller teams go on runs, it really that's the localization part of it. It really, you can feel it pulsating in the city, and that every, because there's a game every day. So it's like, oh my gosh, you're basing like at school everywhere. You're basing your whole entire day in the summer around these games, especially when you get into the fall when everyone's back to work and school. And it's like, we got playoffs coming. It can be so powerful. And to just have these big players all be able to go to the coast and go to LA and go to the Yankees and go to the Red Sox, or maybe end up in, you know, in Houston or something, like spread the wealth around, I think, a little bit with these big name players, so that you get as many communities, you know, really caring about the sport. That's what's going to be best for it.
Yeah. So we just fixed base.
We
fixed baseball. All we couldn't fix the trust. If you haven't watched our trust episode, we recapped that right before this.
We still are out on that.
Yeah, guys, go watch that. If you want to, the finale was really bad, but you can hear us talk all about what they need to fix about it. I hope you enjoyed this. You know, with football season coming to an end, this will kind of bounce around. We'll come up with different topics and stuff. But if there's anything that happens throughout the week where you're like, dude, talk about this, I want to hear Phil and Will talk about it, let us know. Comment on this video.
We'll talk about anything. Yeah, see, NFL is.
It doesn't like just have to be sports. Yeah,
it's 90% of what we talked about on our first. This is our fourth episode. We're a month in to the Phil and Will show. Yeah, we can talk about whatever. I mean, I still have my pressing question, Phil. I don't know when I'm ever going to bring it up.
Maybe next week.
Maybe next week when we have. I don't know. We're going to have a Super Bowl preview. We'll talk about the matchup when it's, you know, when it's Niners Chiefs, a rematch of the 2020 Super Bowl.
But yeah, so go listen to that. If you're an Oscars fan, if you're a movie fan, go check out mine and John's Oscar nomination reactions. I know a lot of people are pissed off about like the Barbie snubs in air quotes, which is really, really funny. So go check out that. We did a whole bunch of talking about the, all of the nominations across the board, and, become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist, $5 tier. You've been getting a whole bunch of movie stuff. Will's New Era, the $10 tier, you're getting the Survivor Rock Draw, the casting perspective, $20 deer, you're getting Every Season Matters, which we're into the last week of Borneo. So we'll be starting Australian Outback on January 29th. That's for the top tier. Become a patron. You also get to join the Discord, have conversations. You can throw in some topics, questions, things like that. Thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And we will see you next week.
See ya.